Welcome to the Human Experience Podcast, where we have folks of all different walks of life share their trials and tribulations, ideas, cerebral chatter, and experiences. We seek to open minds, shed light, and make our modern world feel a little less lonely, realizing that we are all connected, one human experience at a time. I'm your host, Aisha Billy. I would like to thank you for tuning in, and I hope you enjoy. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi. How are you doing today?
I'm like instantly nervous. Hello. Good morning.
No, do not be. You're doing great. So I'm so excited to have Aslan on the show because her work is very much aligned with, I would say, my life's work. So if you can kind of get into like what you do, Aslan.
Okay, so my official title that I go by that you can find on my website and Instagram is Alignment and Embodiment Guide. It's a very like accurate but general term for what I do. What I really do, like the meat of this, is when I'm working with people, I specialize in subconscious narrative and subconscious beliefs. So when I'm talking to someone, when we do like our initial session or an intake, I'm actually looking for where your nervous system glitches. And then we're looking for the very specific what your behaviors actually are saying and replicating. So the one area, like the one big thing that you're just constantly stuck on, that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for the beliefs that exist around this space. It's essentially a type of trauma work, but I recently decided that like, because of my own like life dealing with CPTSD, which is very hard for me to say, my tongue gets tied every time, I've like recently decided that I'm just emotionally immature and no one actually gets to say that I have trauma.
CPTSD, so, what's that?
Chronic post-traumatic stress disorder.
Okay.
Or I think there's another name for it as well. Instead of chronic, there's another like title that
maybe complex.
Basically, you stop having full flashbacks where people will recede and have a flashback, and it's more of an emotional experience. So you don't have like the main triggers. You'd be like, I'm having a flashback. You have emotional. Anyways.
That's really interesting. No, that's super interesting. Yeah.
Well, this actually leads back to the last, where we left off on our last conversation. So, again, when I'm working with clients, I'm really like looking for those little subconscious triggers, and I help people reprogram and retrain their emotional response to their environment so that they can really change the foundation of their emotional architecture.
Yeah, for sure. I wanted to ask you what are a few examples of these glitches?
Yes. So I'm looking for trauma patterns when I'm talking to people. So a lot of times you will have people will start stuttering. The big one, like how I know that like we've really found it, is when they'll say like the most precise, beautiful, encapsulated sentence of what they're going through and then forget. Like it just disappears.
Yeah.
How many times they say it to me in a conversation. If they forget, that's it. Because their nervous system is literally creating a break and burying it. It's hiding it.
Yeah.
So they're not quite ready to deal with it, but we can kind of start to take the protection patterns that exist around this thing, and we can start to reprogram and reshape their response to the protection patterns, which will slowly unbury this aspect and allow them to feel it and fully release it and actually be able to change their perspective and their point of view.
Yeah, I think forgetting is like a really common tool that our brain uses to cope, you know. And I remember my mom had a particularly traumatic upbringing, and her and her father don't have like the best relationship for very clear reasons of like a lot of shit that went down. But when I ask her about him, you see this like numbing and like, for, yeah, exactly, like this glaze that comes over her. And I remember, like, thinking the first time, like, I came across her doing that. I mean, I was young. I didn't really understand the inner fabric of trauma. And I remember thinking, that was weird. Like, what just happened? You know? Yeah. So I do think that that's a really common thing, you know?
It is. And what you're actually describing is what I see as a recession. That's another thing that I look for, is to watch the person just kind of, it's like they take a step backwards and they leave their body in the front of them, but they're back there.
Yeah.
They just stepped out of the conversation. They're like reviewing a memory that they're not fully capable of embodying. Yeah. So they step away. And yeah, really common. All of these things are really common. It doesn't matter the level of trauma or thing it is that you experience that you can't fully take in your life. It doesn't matter the level, and it doesn't matter the person. Like, I work with amazing, healthy people, and I work with very dysfunctional people. And I mean, there's a full spectrum there, but everyone has it. Even the super healthy, like ambitious, they have something.
There's no thing where it's like the traumatized motherfuckers are over here on this side and the untraumatized motherfuckers are over here on this side. As a human, you can't escape experiencing trauma. And I want to know, in layman's terms, how you define trauma.
Oh, I don't think I've ever tried to necessarily do that. Yeah, okay. So for me, in my experience, in my perspective, let's put it that way, in my perspective, through my lens and what I've gone through and experienced and the people that I've met and dealt with, I would say that trauma is literally something where you have a core belief or your identity, and then you have something that happens to you that challenges it to the extent that it breaks.
Mm.
So for me as well, all trauma is relational trauma, which means it takes a human to break you.
Mm.
It takes a human to heal you, period. Like, all trauma is relational. It's human to human disconnection, and it's becoming disconnected from yourself, from your community, from those foundations that actually create that healthy environment that allows you to process what happens to you
and feel secure and grounded and not dysregulated, essentially. I recently went to a TED conference, and there was a neurologist who presented, and she was saying that trauma, like, we as humans, we co-regulate each other. And she was saying, like, this is a little bit more of, like, a topic that's layered on top of this, but I'm happy to hear what you have to say. She was talking about, she's actually from Vietnam, but she did a lot of her schooling here in LA. She's a UCLA alum, and she's been in the States for what sounds like a really, really long while. And she was saying that the American culture is very much like suffer alone, deal alone, heal alone, 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 where we actually need one another to co-regulate. And that, you know, that super hyper individual way is actually not good for our brains. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. That wasn't new information to me, because my parents are from Turkey, you know, which is very much like more of a community oriented society than here. But yeah, I would love to hear, like, your take on that, like the hyper individualism with healing.
I was talking to one of my friends last night. One of my girlfriends called in after I had like a full day of clients, and it was like my time to like get a little TLC from a friend.
Yeah.
And we were having a similar conversation, but I was kind of talking to her about how, like, what it is that really makes life great and what makes life worth living and for fighting for, and all of these things that like give you resilience and grit and passion and purpose, and all of it for me personally comes down to the relationships that we build. But I was talking, and I am talking now currently about our biochemical experience. There's nothing more addictive than passion, than sex, than finding a partner, than finding a mate, than having children and building a family and connection with family and connection with your parents and your siblings. There is nothing that can replace those kinds of connections. There's nothing that creates a more intense, long-lasting response in our spirit, in our soul, in our body than those experiences. So money, cars, houses, anything above a basic need to keep you in a place that's not like survival. I really feel like the individualistic side of our society keeps you in survival. It keeps aiming for things that don't actually supply you with anything that will make your life great.
Yeah.
It keeps you in survival. It keeps you fighting for something that's just doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because I've heard this term like a while ago. I never really understood it until honestly being in adulthood for years. Now I get it. That America is kind of like a third world country with the Gucci belt. And I never got that because I was like, no, it's not. No, it's not. No, it's not. But I've been in survival mode ever since like I've had to adult myself. And I'm like, why am I constantly in survival mode? This is so weird. So
bankrupt.
Yeah.
We're bankrupt.
Yeah.
The American society doesn't really care that much about the American. We're just part of the commodity that it uses to fuel its machine.
Yeah.
I mean, we're bankrupt. We pay all of this money to go to college, to have a career that's not going to sustain us, that's not going to buy a house, it's not going to do these things, especially if you're in the major metropolis. If you're New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Chicago, the odds are against you.
Yeah, I remember when my cousin came here, she immigrated here when she was just a few years ago, and she's like 25 now, so she was 21. Yep. And I was still living in New York at the time, so that's where she immigrated to. And she was staying with our family for a little bit. And she was like, you guys don't, like, come together with your neighbors, like, a few nights a week or every night to hang out at the end of the day. And I was like, no, I don't even know. We don't even know our neighbors anymore. Growing up, I did, but we don't know them anymore. And she was like, that's so weird. And then I remember on Thanksgiving, she was like, it was her first time celebrating it. And she was like, you guys just get together and eat food, like just to kind of eat food. And I was like, yeah. And she was like, that's so weird. Like this lack of like deeper bonding was culturally was so bizarre to her. She couldn't wrap her brain around it. And I remember when she asked me about, because I've been to Istanbul several times. I've been at her house in Istanbul several times for at least a month at a time. And I seen the culture, but I never could connect it, you know, because in my mind, it was like, that's them way over there in Turkey. And then this is us way over here in America. I didn't realize culture is just a way of life and you can incorporate way of life wherever you are. But anyway, when she said that to me, you guys don't get together at the end of the day. I thought back to like nights in Istanbul where I was like, we did do that. Like I know her neighbors there. You know what I mean? And it's like just so, the isolation is so fascinating, but it's clearly detrimental, you know?
I got to a point, I have an autoimmune disease. I have Graves' disease, a thyroid problem. And I got to a point, I was still undiagnosed, but I had kind of been dealing with this journey for 10 years where I was getting progressively and progressively more sick. And then I'd get better and then more sick. And I had a client that took me with them to Greece. So I ended up with my own apartment living in Greece for a month during one of these summers, but I was still sick. So I was very like concerned about how to kind of handle this being in another country. And partway through my trip, I ended up making friends with the owner of the little cafe that I would go and eat at like every morning because I had the pay stipend to go and do that. So Yes. I would go and I would eat and I would write, and I made friends with this lady. And she comes up to me one day and she's like, "Why do you always eat the same thing?" She's like, "It's so weird." And I was like, "Well, I have food allergies. I have these problems, blah, 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 blah." And she just kind of looked at me and she's like, "My husband is the local doctor. You're going to go 3 buildings down."
Wow.
"My husband is going to see you." So I did what she asked me to do. And I ended up having like this whole community on this little island just took care of me for a month. They like took me in. They took me in once they realized I was not a like passing tourist, that I was actually living and working there. And the second they knew that I was working there was when they all took me in. Like the whole little tiny town in Cassiope, Greece just took care of me. And that experience alone was so healing, because every morning I'd wake up and I'd have like 10 people that would say hi and check on me and make sure that I was healthy and that I was eating good. And I would go and pick up food at my little local spot, and they'd put a bunch of extra food in because they knew I had like this little kitchen and couldn't really cook. And just everyone went out of their way to take care of me. And that literally shifted my health. It took my stress levels and everything down to a point where I got really, really healthy during that time.
That is so fucking crazy. Like, it's almost not foreign to me, because I've seen that in my parents' country, but it's totally foreign to me. I've never had that experience, and I'm sure most of the listeners haven't either, where, first of all, who do you know who would be like, "My husband's a doctor, go now"? It's more of like a, "What's your insurance and how are you going to pay?" Like, it's so money oriented. And I don't want to demonize money. Like, I understand we absolutely need it. You know, it's a standardized way of like exchanging. But the issue happens when it's valued so much before the human. When dollar sign comes so far before the human. But what's funny is, it's hard for us in the States to not be that way because of how expensive things survival is. So yeah. It really is a matter of survival. Like, anytime I'm financially okay, and I have a really good way of budgeting, so I'll budget in a way where I'll have X amount, where at the end of the month, spend it. And, you know, if I can cover dinner with my friends, I will. If I can cover the drink with my friends, I will. Sometimes I really can. Most of the time, I can't, just like the rest of us. So It's really interesting. I remember when I was studying abroad in Germany, we had a lot of Australian students. And when we would go out, they would buy rounds. And that, I was 20. This was a long time ago. And I remember like being like, "Oh my God, he just bought me a drink. And then she just bought me a drink. Like, this is so weird." And we were together for 4 months. And throughout that 4 months, I remember another night, one of the students, her name, it's not coming to me right now, but she was like, "The Americans are the worst when it comes to money." She's like, "I don't know what it is with you guys, but you guys are unbelievable when it comes to money." And the way she was talking about it, money was so casual. And to us, it's not casual, you know? So it's really interesting seeing, like, what parts of this, of being sick, it really isn't our fault. And that, exactly as you said, there's an emotional bankruptcy that we experience a part of, like, this system. So that being said, what would your advice be, like, for the American, I guess? Like, you know, what would your advice be for being less emotionally bankrupt?
Wow. That is a huge question. Oh, Lord, I'm not sure how to answer that one. Every client that I work with is a little bit different. I do have a focus in chronic pain and neuromuscular retraining and retraining our nervous system. I mean, my mind just kind of goes to, like, find something or someone that you love and chase the shit out of it. Like, don't stop. Like, don't stop. Like, give your heart enough value that you take it with you everywhere you go. right? Like, I don't, like, whatever it is about you, just find that one thing that lights you up and keep chasing it regardless. I don't know. That's both good and bad.
Well, it's like pouring into your own heart.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Can you pour? It doesn't have to be tangible, into your own heart. Is it hosting your friends once a week for dinner?
Yeah.
Is it
unity? It's just anything that you are very passionate about, just take it with you everywhere you go. Because if you can find something in your life that does that and builds that up for you, I'm not necessarily talking about job. I'm not necessarily talking about purpose. I'm literally like, for me, like, I love kids. I have 10 godchildren. I've helped raise 10 children. I just added an 11th because my friend's daughter, who's 20, who I've known since she was 6, had decided that she wanted to be added to the ranks, and she didn't like the fact that she had so much competition, so she asked to be added. Like, if you are engaged in that thing that you love and you bring it with you, like, every conversation that you have everywhere you go is a potential to grow that. So, yeah, it's just, for me, it's community and family and, like, just really engaging in things that challenge and grow me. Like, I do aerial arts, which is how we met. I do gymnastics. I do some stunt work because I love being in my body. It's when my mind is quiet and everything kind of hits a flow for me. But those are also the areas where I meet up with people who just hands down are supportive. I started to make jokes because, like, we go every Sunday to do aerial acrobatics at the beach. And now every Sunday, like, I will just randomly see something. And, like, as I'm driving, I'll roll down my window and, like, yell something positive, because that's what we do when we're watching each other, like, learn and try these new aerial acrobatic moves. So it's become just, like, an aspect that, like, spills over, that now we just kind of yell support to random strangers.
That's fucking amazing. Yeah. I mean, I totally agree with that. It's community. And I think, like, what I've been reflecting on so much is the toll that internalized capitalism has had on my life. I used to sing all the time. Singing was, like, my thing. I was, like, the girl on the block who sang, yada, yada. And after after my parents divorced, I swung really heavily from, like, all the fun stuff to, like, what are things that I could do to build the resume, to get into the college, to get the job, like, that whole mentality. And I completely abandoned the artistic side of myself. And because I thought, singing's not good for me. It's not adding. It's not, you know, productive. All these years later, as I am unlearning a lot of shit, I was learning about, like, polyvagal theory and ways to, you know, like, calm yourself and regulate your nervous system, cold exposure, tapping. One of them is actually humming or singing.
Yeah.
And I was like, see?
Well, it's not only that, but the body responds to different frequencies. So when you are singing, you are emoting. You're connecting both your body and your mind in a way that gets very disconnected when we're dealing with trauma and stuck in, like, survival or fight or flight modes. We get split. Like, the mind creates a split. The body tries to take over, which is why people forget. So singing literally helps release the emotions and the activity that is stuck, the excess energy that's stuck in the body.
And it makes you happy.
Everything out. And those different frequencies are different areas of our body, and our cell actually respond to those different frequencies. So the more you can sing, the better.
Yeah. It's so funny because it's just like, here I was thinking that this thing wasn't productive at all. Not to bring it back to productivity, but, like, if I was to, it fucking is. Like, it actually will help me decompress if I sing for, like, I don't know, a couple songs at the end of the night and just jam. I'll probably sleep better that night. You know what I mean? So it's just, I think, like, the theme that we're really driving home here is this disconnect between you're human and your soul.
Yeah.
And trying to understand, like, why that happens, you know, and how we could find a way to, like, bring it back in that union.
I meant re-embody it. That's what I do.
Literally your job title. I just said your job title.
It's true, though. It's true.
It really is.
It's 100% true, all of it. And I like your comment about the singing. Like, I have a very, very strong internal critic. Like, my mind just talks, it goes. It's constantly going. When I'm having a really good day, I have a DJ that's just playing a soundtrack. It's great.
Wow.
And you will actually, like, catch me, like, dancing in random places. Like, that the DJ has going to, like, emphasize my day. That's a good day.
Okay. Yeah, no.
Critic has taken a hike and the DJ's, like, got the decks going.
Yeah, that's, like, what we need is, like, a way to just get the inner critic to kind of calm the fuck down so that we could actually just, like, vibe for a sec.
So my background was I'm a neuromuscular retrainer. So I have a massage therapist that specializes in long-term chronic pain recovery. I work specifically with chiropractors, pain management doctors, and physical therapists. I would work with clients that are either slip and fall, car accidents, chronic conditions such as autoimmune disease and other things like that. So I have had a very, very long career, over 16 years specializing in long-term chronic pain, and I realized that when I would have people adjust their behavior, so I would take I would look at the protection patterns and the mechanisms in their body, and I would have them embody a new posture. And once they started working with the new posture came with new habits and new emotional behaviors, because now they're interacting different with their environment. And I found that those people who made those changes actually healed their long-term chronic pain. People that didn't heal. They didn't heal. They didn't make a big change. There would be like a minimal shift, but people who did these small things would heal years and years. Like, my average client was a year and a half, because that's when the medical system kind of kicks you out and puts you on drugs. So my specialty was a year and a half to 10 years of chronic pain. And I would literally have people that had 10 years of chronic pain have massive adjustments and massive changes in their life just working with me for a month and a half to 2 months max.
Wow.
Massive changes. So I work very specifically to reprogram people's emotional experience to their environment. That is my specialty. That's why I look for that subconscious narrative. Like, where is that belief? Where are you physically inhabiting that belief, and what is it doing in your life, and how do we adjust it?
Have you ever had a client with chronic throat pain?
Yeah, I'm one of them.
Yeah, I was going to say you too.
Thyroid conditions can cause chronic throat issues. It's for the women that I've worked with, it's either if they have a thyroid problem, they either have the like internal scratchy throat that has the pressure that feels like it's kind of choking you, or they have the lower end, the kind of Hashimoto's low thyroid disorder, and it goes into PCOS and fibroids and ends up in their uterus.
I actually think that the throat and like the vagina is like connected, and they actually look similar. I'm asking because I had a vocal injury that was chronic and did not heal with vocal therapy, and I got really, really, really good vocal therapist towards the end of like my therapy journey, and it helped a lot, but the polyps still didn't clear, and then I got surgery. But I've noticed, like, well, I bring that up because when I saw the scope of the vocal cords, it looks like the secret garden with the flower of a woman, you know what I mean? Yeah, and I was like, this is interesting. I feel like these two areas are probably connected. And then as I started connecting with folks like yourselves, I would hear about that a lot. But even like after surgery, and this might be because of the injury that's manifested and having surgery on both vocal folds, I do feel like I have that, like a pain here. And I did start EMDR, by the way, and I had an EMDR session yesterday and we were talking about my family. My throat got so tight. Like when I say tight, it's tightened up like that before, but it's been a while. And it was like so painful. Like my throat all of a sudden was on fire. It felt like lava slash like becoming a rock at the same time, like super, super stiff. And I was curious what your thoughts are on that, an experience like that.
That is the excess energy of you suppressing your voice, choking and actively suppressing into a rock.
That's exactly what I thought too. Because
it's the same thing. Like I'm very emotionally attuned and my body is very, very active, and I get the same thing. If I try and suppress my voice, it instantly feels like someone is just kind of starting to choke deeper and deeper and deeper, and it comes like from just underneath the collarbone and then chokes up like to right here.
Yeah, that's where the vocal folds are, like right in that middle spot.
That's also where your thyroid is. So if they remove it, they slit your neck right here and take it out.
Did you get yours removed?
No, I still have mine. I'm just ready. I have like a nice little line there in case I ever need to. But
you
I'm
going
to
try and keep it. I was going to ask you something with the throat. Yeah, so I think it stems from like not being heard as a younger child. I wanted to ask, are you afraid to speak up? Do you feel like if you speak up, shit's going to hit the fan?
So my business name is Emotional Architecture. And I created a program when I was working as a meditation teacher. I had a class called Emotional Awareness, and I taught kind of these different things. And started this program where I worked myself through it, and I basically studied all of my emotions and all of the different things that came up that created these triggered negative experiences. And I got to what I consider the base of my emotional architecture. And I found at the base of the very foundation of the difficult experiences that I have in my life, I found the protection mechanisms and the behaviors that allowed abuse to be repetitive in my life. Sorry, I went too far. Rephrase the question again.
No, you're like, completely fine.
Buried it.
Are you afraid to, or were you afraid to vocalize, and that if you vocalized, like, shit would hit the fan, things would get bad?
Yeah, so for me personally, at the very, like, bottom of all of this is I actually found a really deep belief is that no one was going to actually show up for me.
Mm-hmm.
So didn't matter. Like it didn't matter. Like saying my expectations, setting boundaries, none of those things mattered because they weren't respected. They were not respected. But the base of the emotional architecture for me was, and for a lot of people, was sexual shame. Denial of the self, right? Because sexual shame, we're breaking the feminine identity. Denial of the self, we're teaching to like leave ourselves behind and take care of other people's needs first. And then fear of abandonment was literally being taught that if you don't take care of the other person's needs, then everyone's going to leave you and hate you. So yeah, very, very, very deep belief that no one's gonna show up. There will be no respect there. And it's been kind of an interesting experience to reprogram that. And this takes us finally full circle to our last conversation where we left. Because we were talking about how there's kind of this emotional experience where it's like we would do certain things. And for me, there was just like a screaming in my head, like trying to address certain things or go to a certain place. And there was just this like internal screaming where there was like nothing attached to it. There was nothing attached to it. It didn't like really have a place. And I realized that that was actually a nonverbal 3-year-old because that's how old I was when the abuse started. So that screaming was a child who didn't have the words or the language to express what she was trying to express. And that screaming is that belief that no one's going to respect my needs or my boundaries or take care of me.
And they think that kids or like babies, toddlers don't have concept. That's actually when, like in attachment theory, the theory states that our attachment style is actually formed from ages 0 to 4. So actually a baby is aware if like the mom's not there, if it woke up and the mom's just not there, it will experience abandonment. So it's really fascinating. I deeply identify, didn't realize till you said it. I noticed it. I didn't have the words for it. I don't speak up a lot because I feel like it doesn't matter either. I'm like, it's not going to be received. Like, it's either not going to be received because the person doesn't have the capacity for it or they don't give a shit or whatever.
Yeah.
So I just won't. And I didn't for a while. And then now I've been kind of retraining myself to just do it little by little, you know?
Yeah. What I've seen in myself and what I've seen in other clients and people that I work with is even once you start retraining and repracticing actually setting expectations and boundaries and like communicating your needs and wants and desires, there because of that belief, when you start trying, it's almost like a screw you, you're not going to do it, and it comes out in this like weird aggressive thing that creates like polarity wise it's like two magnets in reverse, so they're repelling each other. So every time you're trying to get help or to express these things and go through it, you're actually creating a repulsion and proving the belief correct. So it's really important to get all the way kind of underneath that and start addressing it, not in like, this is my need, this is my boundary, but in a very playful way. Hmm. So like when I'm working with my clients, I have them start with, reinforcing positive beliefs specifically while the subconscious is soft. This is one of the most beautiful mechanisms of our body and our soul coming together, and the reason that prayer is so effective. If you pray first thing in the morning and you pray first thing at night, we have that reticular activating system in our brain that's going to take the things and the focus that we give and prove it right in our life. So we're literally empowering our subconscious and our body and our beliefs to like prove that we are safe, that we are worth hearing, that people want to be around us and spend time with us, that our hobbies and interests are fascinating, and that we collect people around us and community around us that are also have the same interests. And my belief in me is valuable to share all of me. So yeah, it's really important to kind of get underneath that thing. Otherwise, every time you try to set your expectations or your boundaries, you end up with that negative, like, pushback.
Underneath the rug. Like the subconscious is, like, all the shit that we sweep underneath the rug. So when you say underneath that thing, it makes me think of that. We need to find a way to get underneath that rug. I love that prayer ritual, morning and night. I'd never thought praying in the morning. I pray at night. When you say pray, do you suggest like stating desires or affirming?
That is a good question. It's usually a little bit of both. I work with a lot of different people, so I try to work within the boundaries of the person's own belief system instead of imposing a belief system on them. Like, I have a lot of clients that are Jewish and Orthodox Jewish. I have clients that are like full pagan and like the whole spectrum. I've had people that are Buddhist. So the way that you pray is really kind of up to you. The one thing that I really try to enforce is that we celebrate a place of gratitude. instead of just like asking and lamenting, like instead of being like, oh, you know, God, source, universe, please, please give me this, I need this, right? Because now we're reinforcing the fact that we don't have something. So I try to get people into a place where they are celebrating the fact that there's the potential and possibility for this to change very quickly. So it's more of a, you know, thank you, God, source, universe, for giving me all of the tools to understand, for opening the path before me, to bring this information into my life. Thank you for, you know, the opportunity that the information that I need is right there, that someone will speak to me today. And then you can always do the reaffirming, like first thing in the morning, I like to do little things. And when I get overwhelmed, especially when I get overwhelmed throughout the day, like I like to kind of do a body focus. One of the big things I've been doing lately, just to reinforce, embodied self-love, is I put my hands over my heart and say, I love you. I put my hands around my rib cage and I say, I've got you. Right.
I love that.
Over my eyes and my forehead and say, I can see you. I see you. And then I'll put them, this is a little bit of a weird one, but I'll put it on the back of my neck and the back of my throat and say, I can hear you.
That just is
whenever that like thing gets too intense. I love you. I got you. I see you. I can hear you.
That is so beautiful.
I'm getting emotional.
No, that's okay. Yeah, it's
practice.
Yeah, it totally is. No, that's so beautiful to see. I recently saw like a martial artist, and he was showing moves of really like ancient practices. I mean, most of it is, and obviously I don't have it memorized, but it was like kind of like a four-step pattern like you just did. And it was like, I honor the fighter within you. I honor the human within you. I honor the protector within you. And like one other thing, like I honor the whatever within you. And that is like a greeting before I think a match and stuff like that. And it's like, it's so fucking beautiful to me because those are the things that make human human. And I find beauty so emotional. Like, I cry more from happiness and beauty than I do of sadness. Like, it's almost harder for me to cry of sadness. But if something's beautiful, like, it really... Well, beauty opens up the heart chakra, you know? So it makes sense. Those are great tips that you shared with us today, like that prayer and the physical like poses. I will say, I wanted to say this, when you had your hands over your heart, that is actually sometimes the way we'll close out an EMDR session, is it'll be something like this, like having your hands crossed over your heart and then like kind of slow tapping, and that you would say like I am capable of being seen, I am capable of being heard, I am capable of being able to connect with people, like something that I struggle with so much because I do have complex trauma, which is like just super intersectional, lots of areas of your say that again,
that's the CPTSD.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I was saying earlier. I was like, it might be called complex, actually. So, you know, I had a lot of identities growing up. Like, I was Muslim in New York during 9/11. My parents were immigrants. They were divorced. I'm queer. Like, there were so many identities that made me feel like it's not possible. There's no way that, like, my fellow American friends can conceptualize it. And so that is actually incredibly damaging to human. Yeah. Like, not feeling belonging can drive a person to suicide. Like, those are really deep things. And that's like one of the things that we would say when we would do the slow tapping is, I am capable of being seen. I am capable of, you know, to kind of help reprogram that, because we are, you know, we just learned at some point we aren't.
I had a client and a friend, like a very, very close friend that I was working with recently. And I was working with an avoidant attachment, like love attachment. And I ended up just doing really intense energy work with him, but literally holding his hands, we started cross so he could kind of like block me out, and just kind of like breathing together and running energy through each other. And every time his guard started to go up, we'd drop it a little bit further and a little bit further, until by the end we were completely holding each other like two little kids, like wrapped all the way around each other. And I just kept repeating over and over and over, you are loved, you are safe, you are received, you are accepted, you are loved, you are safe, you're received, you're accepted, until his body just like completely like crumbled. Wow. And I just held up like all of his weight, just kind of taking this space of being like opposite sexes and just being safe. Just being safe. Yeah. And that's it.
No like hidden ulterior motive. Just it's exposure therapy of like, see, we're just existing together, and like, I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just here. That's it. I want to express like profound gratitude and thank you for the work that you do. You clearly have a calling to heal and help people. And I just want to thank you for your emotional availability. It's fucking awesome. And that, you know, you have explored other cultures, and that you really are like a human of this earth, you know. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you or work with you, where can we find you?
You can go to emotionalarchitecture.us. That is the primary website. It's a little bit easier to just go to Instagram. You can look up Aslyn Berry or E_emotionalarchitecture. You should be able to find me there as well. I do have a link in the bio that can take you straight to being able to schedule a like gifted 20-minute session to just talk and see, just so you can get to know me a little bit. I can get to know you a little bit and kind of figure out whether or not it would be good for us to work together, because I don't accept everyone into my programs. I'm not the one for everybody. Yeah, it's probably the best way to do it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, it was fun. I'm glad that we like made it work.
We did make it work. We had technical difficulties, but I'm good at problem solving, y'all. I really fucking am. And I instead FaceTimed her and recorded it, because I have a good mic through FaceTime. So anyway, thank you again so much. And that's a wrap on today's episode. Thank you for tuning in. Please share, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating if you gain anything at all from today's podcast. And we look forward to having you back next.